Part of the reason I'm here is the Hilltop Institute in Maryland has a program called the Hospital Community Benefit Program. It's funded by Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the Kresge Foundation, and it's designed to help inform policymakers at the state, perhaps national and local levels, as to what's going on with the benefit program. And if you go to the Hilltop website, the reason I mention this is you can click on Hospital Community Benefit Program, and there's a whole series of newsletters and briefs relating to the issue of hospital community benefits that'll give you all kinds of examples of and illustrations of collaborative efforts, as well as, you know, the IRS background and almost everything you need to or want to know about hospital community benefits. My job, I think, is to set a little bit of context, a little bit of background, and then some observations in terms of policymaking, and then, like I said, to turn it over to the experts who are involved on a day-to-day basis in the policy development for hospitals, for community organizations, and for public health. There's always been, as far as hospitals, an obligation, a sense of what they should be doing in the community beyond serving the patients that come in through their doors. There's been, that history goes back even to the 19th century. There's been exemptions from certain taxes for charitable organizations dating back to then. But healthcare as a whole was not seen in and of itself as a charitable purpose. You may recall, as I do, that you know, in the 50s and 60s, in a totally different context, outside the tax structure, you know, you had the Hill-Burton loans that really developed community hospitals around the country. Those no-interest, low-cost or low-cost loans to communities to build hospitals came with an expectation that those hospitals would provide charity care. And I can remember back in you know, the late 60s working in a clinic where we still had to fill out Hill-Burton reports showing what charity care was provided because the clinic was associated with a community hospital that had received Hill-Burton loans. So there's a long history there of the expectation of community benefits. But the real emergence, I think, came from the IRS in the mid-50s and then more particularly in the 60s. And as far as the hospital community benefit, when you think of Medicare and Medicaid coming in the 60s, there was question as to how much charity care is going to be needed with the advent of expanded insurance coverage. Much the same question we face with the ACA now. In 1969, the IRS establishes a broader standard of community benefits, which go beyond the charity care to include professional education, research, activities to promote community health improvement. And again, the experience or the anticipation and the effect of Medicare and Medicaid, the influence that had in expanding that community, that understanding of community benefit. I remember doing my master's thesis back in the 60s on comprehensive health planning agencies and how they were aligned with jurisdictions. And as a case study, I took the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area where there was a Council of Governments and a health planning, comprehensive health planning agency within the Council of Governments. And reading through the reports back into the late 50s when I was doing that, the one of the reports showed the priorities for that given year, I think it was 59 or 1960, for that area, for comprehensive health planning, the two priority issues were animal-controlled stray dogs in the metropolitan area, and the second was on the shortage of charity care beds, and particularly in Prince George's Hospital, which was designated with Negro beds, but the effect that was having on other hospitals in terms of their designated charity wards, and they weren't big enough and weren't being able to accommodate, you know, needs. So there's this relationship, I think, with charity care and with larger issues of community benefit have been there for some time. IRS, we talk about, you know, 990s. All nonprofit agencies are expected to submit their 990 forms to the IRS detailing financial details and other details in terms of their nonprofit status and their financial status and how they're doing. Hospitals are also expected to submit to the Schedule H. And the Schedule H details responses regarding the policies and practices of the hospital's financial assistance program and community benefits, including details as to whether the policies are written, whether they're based on the federal poverty guidelines, and if they are based on the federal poverty guidelines, what they use in terms of 100%, 150%, 200%, very detailed kind of expectations and reporting on the Schedule H. All the on Schedule H has a number of worksheets that tell them how to go through, along with their audited financial report, how much they've spent on very specific activities under those categories that I mentioned. And, you know, if you've listed this on column A, what... I hope it's nothing I'm doing, is it? Okay, they're checking on. And you know, if you filled out this, combine it with this row, add it to this column, much like our own 1040 tax forms, except in much, much more detail. In addition to the financial assistance calculations, hospitals are required to account for other benefits like community health improvement services, health professions education, all on separate worksheets, cash and in-kind contributions that they may be making, again, on separate worksheets. So that's one context with the IRS. Another context is certainly the expectation of state governments, and you've probably heard or read about or seen reference to Illinois and the revocation of hospitals' nonprofit status because it was determined by the County Board of Revenue and the State Department of Revenue that they weren't meeting their uncompensated care or their charity care obligations, and that was reversed on appeal, but then later upheld by the state Supreme Court, justifying the removal of the tax exemption from certain hospitals that it was determined were not meeting. Now, not meeting the expectation. Now, Illinois had a requirement that was tied in very specifically with charity care. So it's not just at the federal level, it's also at the state level. Subsequently, amidst much turmoil in the hospital community in Illinois, the legislature has expanded their definitions of community benefit to go beyond the uncompensated care provisions and allowing hospitals to report on other factors. So the ACA context, like I said, was a concern with Medicare and Medicaid, is that if you have 32 million people adding to insurance, certainly the level of uncompensated care is going to be reduced, and there are other expectations for hospitals, not just on the uncompensated care dimension. ACA requirements, I'm not going to do this. This is Julie and others will be going through the community health needs assessment requirements under the ACA, so let me skip over that. But let me take note of some of the other ACA requirements besides, in addition to the community health needs assessment. One is the financial assistance policy. Hospitals are required to have written eligibility and guidelines for their financial assistance, calculation of what a patient is expected to pay and the limits on that, and publicize to the community what those standards and policies are. There's provisions as far as emergency care and whatever financial assistance policies the hospital has should not be applied for emergency care, which must have, the hospital must have written policies that provides care to individuals regardless of the financial assistance or pay policy. The limitation on hospital charges, that individuals uninsured must be written policies as far as charging what would be the general cost or pricing as far as insurance companies and not going on a fee schedule that penalizes people who are uninsured by the fact that they don't have a group discount. So as far as standards, and then what are the consequences of doing that? Is there a minimum amount established in the ACA or elsewhere? No, there's no minimum amount that's considered to be meeting the community benefit. With all the information, some of which I detail, that it has to be submitted in their Schedule H, including audited financial statements, a fact and circumstances approach is used to determine. Sanctions for noncompliance include $50,000 for any taxable period annually, and of course the potential of losing your tax exemption. I know some of the early write-ups, I was going to talk about models of how cooperative ventures could be done. I'm really not going to talk about models. I don't know that there are models to speak of. Let me give a few examples and maybe go from there in discussion in terms of models and so on. First, review and approve. Minnesota two-year state budget was enacted in the spring of 2011 with a rider amendment attached to require nonprofit hospitals and health maintenance organizations to develop and implement community benefit plans that employ evidence-based strategies adopted by the SHIP. It also directed the State Health Department to review and approve the hospitals, HMOs, communities, benefit plans to ensure their consistency with state health needs and priorities identified by the SHIP. Specifically, in this case, obesity and tobacco use. The State Hospital Association mounted an organized effort and opposition to these requirements, initiating a letter writing and telephone campaign to its members to influence state legislators to repeal them. In the midst of substantial controversy, the State Health Department required report to the legislature in February 2012 recommended that the state not review and approve, but simply comment on and make recommendations regarding the hospital's community benefit plans. Ultimately, the 2011 budget rider was repealed by unanimous votes in both the Minnesota House and Senate. voluntary cooperation. There's, again, these aren't models. I'm not holding them out as models, whether it's a review and approve model there or voluntary cooperation. There's hundreds and hundreds of instances of different ways to approach it. In North Carolina here, requires mandatory accreditation for local health departments. To secure and maintain accreditation, local health departments were required to complete a CHNA every 4 years. With ACA, the requirement was every 3 years, and the state accreditation periodicity requirement was a barrier to hospital health department collaboration in conducting CHNA by their joint communities, of their joint communities. In response, North Carolina Health Department modified the accreditation requirement to every 3 years rather than 4 years, again, just to advance that collaboration. In Oregon, it's interesting, there was the state issued an RFP advertising for and soliciting a neutral organization that would provide be a broker actually for community-based organizations, for the health departments, and for hospitals to develop a collaborative four-county community health needs assessment. A little different, you know, approach. Certainly there's going to be more and more attention by state agencies in terms of what the expectations are for these plans and community health needs assessments as budgets tighten. I think one of the dynamics here is how collaborative are these efforts going to actually be? It seems to me, from looking at the publications and some of the back and forth, there's a lot of instances of collaboration taking place, but there's also a lot of tensions, you know, among the organizations. Hospital pushback, you know. You can see here, I don't know if you can read the bottom line, Schedule H needs streamlining to reduce redundant and overly prescriptive requirements. There is, you know, some concern from hospitals in terms of making it simpler. There's also concern from hospitals in terms of what is the role of the state agency, the public health agency, in advancing these plans and collaborating, and who's taking the lead, what kind of prerogatives are exercised by the state, and so on. Certainly there's also concern from public health agencies and state health agencies to try and stimulate that collaboration. Sometimes that stimulant is looked upon as being a little overreaching. Certainly, I think people would say that the Minnesota experience was a little bit of an overreach on the part of the state. But when you look at, you know, the American Health Association, or Hospital Association, excuse me, you know, April report, Managing Population Health, the Role of the Hospital, and other documents that have come from AHA, it seems to me that there could be much more openness there to a genuinely collaborative effort that isn't always reflected in documents. Again, this is my opinion, not the opinion of the Hilltop Institute, and I'm saying it in part to stimulate some of the discussion among the experts that are following me for it. One of the publications that we put out at the Hilltop, and I'll close with that, a whole issue brief, several pages showing numerous examples of collaboration that are really productive, ends with, the ACA's watershed community benefit framework presents opportunities for state and local health departments to initiate and participate in partnerships with nonprofit hospitals through which hospitals can satisfy their federal community responsibilities, benefit responsibilities. With the inclusion of CBOs and other members of the community, such partnerships can harness diverse community perspectives, strengthen community assessment and planning process, and engage new and valuable sources of community expertise and facilitate sharing of data sources. I think that's a good goal to have. I think we have a lot of work left to do to get there. Thank you.